All right, we are live. Our first webinar, our second first webinar. Welcome. My name is Kristen Ulmer. I'm a fear and anxiety specialist, and you have just signed up for the most modern approach to fear and anxiety that is out there. This ain't your mama's workshop on fear and anxiety, we'll put it that way. So we're going to get you feeling better. I want to start with a story. I use a lot of analogies, stories, and then also my dialogue, Shift the Game of 10,000 Wisdoms, which I was talking about last week. This is one of my favorite stories. Two men enter a wood chopping contest. Whoever can chop the most amount of wood by the end of the day wins the contest. Let's say they win this webinar. So the first guy, the bell rings, he rolls up his sleeve, he grabs his axe, he tears into the wood pile, and he chops wood all day long. Very impressive finish, huge pile of wood at the end of the day. The second guy, though, the bell rings, he rolls up his sleeves, he grabs his axe and tears into the wood pile. But his technique would be to spend 50 minutes out of every hour chopping wood, and he would spend the additional 10 minutes sharpening his blade. Who do you think won the wood chopping contest? Exactly, the guy who sharpened his blade. What this webinar is about sharpening your blade around the subjects of fear and anxiety. It turns out, what I've learned after 30 years of experience, is that fear is actually not a problem in our lives. The problem comes from how we treat it, or rather, we don't treat it, we don't deal with it. And that's what we're going to be addressing during these four sessions. The four sessions are made up of today, and the second one will be on the 1st of February. And both today and the 1st of February will be all about awareness, because awareness is power in today's modern world. If you can become aware of how you treat fear, what the problem is at the root core of your relationship with fear and anxiety, sometimes just to see it is to stop it. And certainly by the end of the second session, you're going to start feeling a lot better. You're going to have some very clear awareness of what the problem is that you have that is unique to you. There's 20 people signed up for this webinar, and there's 20 different reasons why people signed up for it, but you're going to be able to see in clear, uncertain terms where you're stuck, and you're going to start to be unstuck by the end of that second session. On the third session, on the 5th of February, we're going to address the holdbacks that you may have in resolving this issue. Like, what's going to hold you back from fixing this problem? Like, you have a foot on the accelerator. The third class is going to be what your foot on the brake is, and what that looks like, and getting unstuck from that holdback. And then the fourth session, which is going to be on February 8th, is going to be super practical advice, step by step, on what to do to resolve your problem. By the 8th, you're going to be well on your way towards getting what you're hoping to get out of signing up for these webinars. Now, I said last week that this is not therapy, and that's why it works so fast. Like, we're not going to spend hours just hashing over your personal life experience, you know, how you were as a child, why you deal with fear the way that you deal with it, because it really doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is how you deal with fear today. Kind of the what and the why is interesting. You know, like, if you have a therapist and you talk about this stuff, it's interesting, but it doesn't really ever solve your problem. We're going to solve your problem not intellectually. Actually, there's a great quote. It's my favorite quote. It's by Einstein. You cannot solve a problem by using the same consciousness that created it. You must learn to see the world anew. So we're not going to use the consciousness that created your problem to solve it, which is your intellect or your rational mind. We're going to look at your problem from a completely different lens, a different set of eyes. So this is not therapy. The other thing that this is not are more tired tools just to quell your fear and anxiety, which, by the way, they work. Like, if you do tapping, if you take 3 deep breaths, if you go to a float spa, if you read a book, if you go exercise. I have a friend who exercises like 8 hours a day. Sure, that's going to make you feel better, but it's just a temporary relief. So instead of giving you just tools to just feel better on a daily basis or even in a moment, instead we're going to address the fear and anxiety, if it's an issue in your life, at the root. And we're going to kind of snip off the root so that you don't have to do all these things every single day just to feel better. So that's what it's not. Not therapy, not more tools to quell your fear and anxiety. What it is We're going to play a game. We're going to have a lot of fun. It's going to be very interesting. It's something, though, that you need to commit to. Like, this is a practice, a program, and it builds upon itself each week. And so you don't want to miss any one of these webinars. And I also, while you're engaged in these webinars, really want you to pay attention. Because if you're multitasking and you're only half listening, it's kind of like, okay, I'm really, really hungry, and I go to the restaurant, and all I do is look at the menu and go to the bathroom and then come back and look at the menu a little bit more. Like, you're never going to satisfy your hunger if you take that kind of approach to these webinars. I talked last week about the four possible ways that you can approach this experience. And it's like tea ceremony. You know, I want you to hold up your hand. If you remember this, you have in your hand a saucer and a cup, and I'm serving you tea. I'm serving you information, lessons, and experience, insights, all of that. And I'm saying, I'm going to pour some tea for you. Would you like some tea? And you say the first possibility is, yes, please, hold your hand up right now. And your cup is upside down. You're actually really not interested in tea. And I want you to pay attention if that's the kind of approach that you're taking to these. The second possibility, I say, would you like some tea? And your cup is upside down, or excuse me, not upside down, it's right side up, but it has a hole in the bottom of the cup. So I could pour this experience into your cup, but it would just go in one ear and out the other. The third possibility, I say, would you like some tea? You hold up your cup and it's right side up, there's no hole, but there's mud and dirt in the cup. The mud and dirt in your cup are your habitual patterns, your typical way of handling a webinar, your things that you know for sure, your revelations that you've had over the years, like maybe, oh, I can never feel any better. It's just lost on me. I'm just destined to live this way for the rest of my life. Like those beliefs, those stories that you have about yourself, that's all the mud and dirt in your cup. And I could pour the tea and you wouldn't be able to drink it. And at best, you might just use what you learn in these webinars to just make that mud and dirt thicker and stronger. Like, oh, I really can't get any better, right? So then the fourth possibility is, though, and this is what I'm hoping that you'll bring to these webinars, is I offer you some tea, and you say, yes, please. And you have what's called an open, empty, upright cup. And from this place, I could pour the tea, you could drink it, you could get some nourishment from it. You'll actually get what you came here for. So as much as possible, if you could have an open, empty, upright cup, not just in this moment, but throughout the whole course, these four different webinars, great. You're going to get the most nourishment that you can out of these webinars. But if all you get out of these webinars is to wake up and realize, like, you know what, my cup's upside down, or I have too much mud and dirt in my cup, you know, that's actually a huge realization, and that's worth the price of admission. You're actually going to get a lot out of these webinars. Like, okay, I appear to be stuck in my patterns, and I'm not willing to actually do what it takes to, I mean, it's only 6 hours, right? I'm not willing to do what it takes to resolve this problem. That's kind of a huge deal to realize that. So, moving on, I want to go over some logistics. I'm going to ask you guys right now for some volunteers to be in the hot seat. Every single webinar, I'm going to have some people be in the hot seat. And what that looks like is I'm going to facilitate you. Now, you're not going to be on video. You're just going to be on audio, so you can still remain anonymous. So these are for people that are kind of in the mood for fear. They're in the mood for having me ask them a lot of questions, basically. It's not therapy, though. We're just going to be playing a game, so don't worry about it. It's not about revealing anything about your past or anything about your problem. But it is saying that you're willing to play the game. So put your hand up right now if you want to volunteer. And how the volunteers work, it's like you want to be in a place where there's no background noise. We found that out last week. I want people that are willing to be an open, empty, upright cup. Raise your hand if you want to be a volunteer. And once you raise your hand, it's a three-step process to have yourself be facilitated by me. You have to raise your hand, first of all. It's at the bottom of the screen. And then the second step is once you're approved, then the third step is you then have to unmute yourself. We can't unmute you. You have to unmute yourself. And so when it's your turn, I'll say, okay, Joe, unmute yourself, and then I'll start facilitating you. So how you can be involved with this process is, first of all, be in the hot seat. I'm hoping that everybody will be in the hot seat at some point during these four sessions. So be sure to volunteer. And the other way that you can be involved is if you have some questions, I want you to go to the Q&A button. I don't want you to put questions on the chat room. I want you to put the questions in the Q&A so we can separate them and submit them at that box at the bottom of your screen. And at the end of every voice, you don't know what that means yet, but it'll be obvious soon, I will answer those questions. All right, so we're looking for volunteers. And also, if you have questions, feel free to add those. We're gonna get started. So hopefully people have volunteered. Yep, we have a volunteer list. The game is this. It's Shift the Game of 10,000 Wisdoms. And I've spent the last 15 years of my life developing this game. And it's a really fun game, for starters. It's very interesting. And it's the fast track towards awareness, being awake, accessing different forms of consciousness that you didn't even know existed. Ken Wilber, if you know who he is, my teacher's version of this was called Big Mind, I mentioned last week. Ken Wilber says that Big Mind, so basically Shift, is the most important facilitation tool ever created in the history of the world in terms of taking people into states of awareness and different forms of consciousness like I mentioned. So you're about to engage in an extremely interesting facilitated process. My teacher gets paid $50,000 a day to facilitate this process with people. So you do not want to multitask or not pay attention to this game. So I'm hearing somebody, is that Mark Miller?
Yes, hi.
Hi. So I'm going to start by facilitating you in this process. Here's the deal. It works like this. I said last week that you're like a corporation with 10,000 employees. So your corporation has a name, and it's Mark. My corporation has a name, it's Kristen. There's corporations in the world like Honda and Google. And the thing is about these corporations, the name is just a concept. Really, what makes up who you are, what makes up any corporation, is the 10,000 employees that are operating in your unconscious world, creating this product that is you, Mark Miller, okay? Mm-hmm. So I'm like a business consultant that's being brought in to help this corporation called Mark Miller run better. And what I'm going to do, how I'm going to do that, is I'm going to speak to key employees in your corporation and single them out one at a time and just see how it's going. You ready to play this game?
Yes.
The way the game works, there's two rules. The first rule of the game is when I ask to speak to an employee in your corporation, I want you to physically shift your body and become in an instant the employee that I asked to speak to. And what that looks like is nothing more than if you're sitting on your right butt cheek, you just shift to your left butt cheek or you move your shoulders just a little bit. Okay. The reason why I have you shift your body physically is because the consciousness that's listening to me right now, we're kind of done with that consciousness. Like, I want you to physically move away from this consciousness and without trying to understand what it even means to be this voice that I'm going to speak to. I'm not going to refer to them as employees anymore. I'm going to refer to them as voices. I want you to physically move away from this reality and shift without trying to understand what it means and then just speak as that voice and it'll all kind of come to you. That's the first rule of the game, the physical shift. The second rule of the game is I now want you to speak in the first person as that employee that I asked to speak to and refer to the self or Mark in the third person. Now, you can't do or say anything wrong, and I hope everybody's paying attention, not just Mark. He is in the hot seat, but everybody needs to be paying attention because I want you to play this game with me and answer the questions that I ask in your own mind and be these voices, be these employees that I asked to speak to on your own. So everybody's going to do the physical shift. Everybody's going to think in their mind in the first person as the voice I asked to speak to, referring to the self in the third person. And realize you can't do or say anything wrong. The only thing you can do wrong is fall out of voice and become this reality that's listening to me right now. And it's my job, certainly with you, Mark, to catch that and bring you back in.
Okay, thank you.
All right, you ready to play this game?
Absolutely.
All right, everybody's going to play it. Don't forget. Let me get a sip of water. Okay, Mark, allow me please to speak to the voice, and this is the first employee I always speak to when I speak to a new corporation. Allow me please to speak to the voice of the controller. So shift your body, becoming an instant without trying to understand what that means, because this is not something that you can grasp. It's just something that you be or don't be.
Okay.
The voice of the controller. And then
Hello.
I say, hi. Then I say, who are you? Who am I speaking to? And you say the controller. So who am I speaking to?
I'm the controller.
Okay. And your job at this corporation is to control, right? That's
yes.
your job.
Yes.
So tell me what it is that you try to control.
I try to control the services and production of the Mark Corporation and sometimes try to control the universe too, which is not working out.
So you try to control the internal makings of Mark, and you control, or you try to control the external world. Like you try to control the universe. If you could control the sun, the moon, the stars, the weather, you would. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Almost, yeah.
Right. And that's your job. Your job is to try to control everything and everybody. Right. How's it going?
Not great. Not great.
Why not great? Is it difficult being you? Is it hard to control these things?
Absolutely. It's, I've learned that, I'm learning to do my best, not to try to control everything and, have confidence that the right things will fall in place more often. But it's a struggle when you've gotten into habits against that.
Right.
So the controller is still there.
Right. So here's the thing. I don't want you to refer to yourself as the controller.
Okay.
I want you to refer to yourself as I, because it's more powerful.
Ah, okay.
Plus, as a facilitator, it's a little weird. Like if somebody were to come up to Kristen at a party and say, hey, Kristen, how you doing? And I would reply, the Kristen is doing great, right? Like you don't want to refer to yourself as an it or a the, like you're an I, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So you're the controller and you realize that sometimes you're spinning your wheels, like you're working hard to try and not waste your time to control the things that you can't control. What can you control?
I can control my attitude, my positivity, and what I do at the moment and what I want to do next.
All right. Let me just tweak it a little bit. I can control his attitude. I can control whether he is positive or not. I can control what Mark spends his time doing. And here's an important point. Are you the self? Is the self you?
I don't know.
So this is an important distinction. So you are not Mark. Mark is not you. But you are a key influencer in his life.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I want everybody to really get that. Like you as the voice of the controller, you're one employee in this corporation called the self. But you are not the self and the self is not you. And that separation is really important. And here's why. I want to have you look at the relationship that you have with Mark. Does Mark feel like you're doing a good job?
No.
Why not? I mean, it seems like you work pretty hard. It seems like you're pretty sharp.
I'm not getting the results that I feel I should be getting based upon my experience level.
And here's the thing. Out in the world, especially when it comes to emotions, thoughts, reality, there's a lot of emphasis placed on you. Like if you could control his thoughts, if you could control his emotions, his fear, if you could control his anxiety, if you could control his motivation level, then he would be the person that he wants to be. And so it's a lot of pressure placed on you. Wouldn't you say?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there's a lot of teachers that teach that. Like, you just need to get to work, put the Rocky theme music on, drink a couple cans of Red Bull, and just do the thing, right? Control all these things. But let's break it down. Can you control thoughts?
Some you can. Some I can.
How often? How well?
It's difficult because the monkey mind, the chatter is evident and pops up often, and it does take the attention away from what I was referring to before about what I'm trying to do.
Right. And one of the things that we're addressing during these webinars is monkey mind. And in particular, monkey mind is particularly obvious in the middle of the night. Like, let's say Mark's trying to sleep, monkey mind shows up, and what do you do as the controller to try and control it?
I try to squelch it and go back to bed with a different idea or thought.
Right. So when you say you try to squelch it, like, do you try to ignore it? Do you fight it? Do you try to distract that mind? Like, let's look at the monkey mind as another employee in this corporation that I could speak to right now if I wanted to.
Okay. Like,
what do you do to that guy?
Sometimes it feels like a battle, and I've been trying to get a little smarter with it by diversion, just trying to divert my mind, if you will, from what's, you know, keeping me up or keeping me or disturbing me.
Maybe what you're trying to do is calm down the monkey mind or promote a different voice, like the calm mind, or just distract Mark mm-hmm. from even dealing with that employee. Like, the employee's showing up, it's screaming, it's yelling, like just doing anything that you can to conduct this orchestra and get some other employee besides that mind kind of taking over the corporation so that he can go back to sleep. Does that sound about right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How hard is it? How much effort?
It's very difficult. No, it's extremely difficult because, you know, the patterns, you know, I'm, you know, over, I'm, you know, 56 years old, and I've been the way existing for, you know, like this or in my head or dealing with this for quite a number of years. So it's not easy. It's not automatic, and there's not a great switch that I could pull or whatever.
And at this point, you're pretty much his only resource to dealing with these problematic children, right? Or voices or employees or roommates or whatever our analogy is. Like, it's, I said before, a lot of pressure on you. And here's the thing. You know, we're up to 10,000 things a day. The traditional number in Zen is actually 10,000. 10,000 employees, you know, could be showing up at any moment. And it's like, if you're the one in charge of conducting this whole orchestra, it's just relentless. And when you think about it, thoughts too. My original question was, can you control thoughts? It's been determined that we have about 50 thoughts a minute. Times 60, times 24, times 7, times, you know, 52. It's like we have millions and millions of thoughts per year. And how many do you really successfully control? It's very, very few. One a day if you work really hard at it, you know? And so it just puts so much pressure on you to just create his reality. And no wonder he's frustrated with you. Here's another question, though. Emotional intelligence is seen as our ability to understand our emotions and control them. So this is a webinar about fear and anxiety. So the suggestion is that you, as the controller, not only if you could control fearful thoughts, but can you actually control the emotions itself? Can you control the anxiety, which is kind of recirculating fear that just kind of is persistent and is around all the time, even if there's no perceived threat? Can you control fear and anxiety?
Not at the moment. Not well.
Not well. Oh, but no. But it's crucial. Like, everybody's counting on you to be the solution to these problems. How does that make you feel knowing that?
Not great.
Not great.
Nope.
You can see why I'm asking to speak to you first. You know, not only are you a gatekeeper to this corporation, but you're also seen as the solution to dealing with the problems that this webinar addresses. And what I'm hearing you say is that it's not working. I'm trying really hard. I'm working nights, weekends. Are you tired? Are you sick and tired? How are you feeling?
A bit beat up, if you will. You know, taking care of responsibilities and making sure I get my workout in and exercising, eating, you know, and staying healthy. And taking his best care of the family and et cetera. But no, definitely some lethargy, some lack of sleep, definitely beat up, I would say, to an extent.
And you said some interesting things, like you can control what he eats, what time he goes to bed, what time he gets up, who his friends are, what he says, what he doesn't say. Like, there's a lot of things that you're really good at controlling. And when it comes to like other methods or modalities, like tools to quell fear, like you can have him take 3 deep breaths. You can have him feng shui his sleep environment. You can have him go to the float spa or do the tapping and all that that helps him feel better. But when it comes right down to kind of dealing with the underlying problem, the only thing that you're really effective at is being able to control the symptoms, of these problems, which is great, right? Like, we kind of give you a pat on the back for that. But what if I were to say that the key to resolving these problems at their root is actually not giving you 3 cans of Red Bull and putting on the Rocky theme music and all that and controlling the sun, the moon, the stars, the minds, the emotions, all of that? And would that feel like a relief for you?
Yeah, I'd be very curious as to what the contrast of those solutions would be. Sure.
Okay. I found, though, that we have to give you something to do because you're such an important voice, and I want to not disrespect you in any way. Like, here's what I want from you from now on. A couple things. First of all, where we're headed with you, because like I said, I'm that business consultant being brought in to make sure this corporation is run great, is your job description in the future is you want to spend your time controlling the things that you can control. Not waste your time trying to control the things that you can't control, like thoughts, like emotions, and have the wisdom to know the difference. So that's your new job description. And the other thing that I'd like you to do as the voice of the controller is, there's 10,000 employees, 9,999 other employees besides you. If you could keep quiet the others that I don't ask to speak to so that I have a direct link to the voices that I do speak to next, that would be great. Like, keep them quiet, especially the one who's trying to understand or the rational mind or the one who's searching for answers, because I don't want to speak to those voices. Would you do that?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Ready to move on. Is there anything else as the controller that you'd like to say or any requests that you have from Mark?
Not at the moment. No.
All right. We're going to head down to Q&A. Thank you very much, controller Mark.
Okay. Thank you.
And I'm going to turn on Q&A and just, I guess there's a question. Oh, does anybody have any questions? Yes. As we're going through this process, if anybody has any questions, just hit the button that says Q&A at the bottom. And it doesn't look like right now we have any questions yet. I'll just wait a little bit. And then we're going to do another voice. And these voices, I'm going to answer some imaginary questions that you may have. The voices that I'm picking to speak to, because there's 10,000 of them, I could speak to any number of them, are ones that are specifically problematic and related to fear and anxiety. And the reason why the controller is my first choice is because a lot of people try to control fear. I tried to control fear. Actually, I was very good at controlling fear during my ski career. And it's one way to kind of not deal with fear. But of course, the controller is limited in its ability to control fear. It actually, what it tends to do is just kind of repress it, push it down into your system. And so, all right, no questions. I'm going to exit Q&A, and I'm going to speak to Vicky next. So Vicky, give me a moment. I'm going to outline an analogy. Now imagine instead of being a corporation with 10,000 employees, we're shifting to you being a parent to 10,000 children. Now, Vicky, I know, don't panic. That's a lot of children. But imagine that you're a parent, and I want everybody to imagine this. Imagine that you're a parent to 10,000 children. Half your children you've named love, joy, gratitude, forgiveness, and the other half of your children you've named monkey mind, fear, anger, sadness. Despite your best intention, would you be able to treat them all the same way? And my guess is your answer is no. So there's two ways of living your life. The first way is where you nurture, love, and show off to the world these children. And the controller can get involved in like nurturing these, like, okay, having a gratitude practice or a joy practice or a calm practice, the voice of calm over here. And then what happens over here? What do we do with these children? Well, the controller gets to work trying to squelch them, push them down, put duct tape over their mouths, plastic bag over their head, lock them in the basement, throw away the key. And then we think, okay, we're on, up here living our lives, you know, on the surface, nurturing these wonderful qualities in ourselves, and we're not dealing with these. And the question is, what's happening in the basement? And that's kind of the riddle that is going to be throughout this whole webinar series. This next voice I'm going to speak to is actually the one that judges the things that are good and the things that are bad. So, Vicky, you ready to go?
Hello.
Oh, can I hear you? Can you hear me, Vicky?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right. I have a note. Tell personal story. I'm going to tell you a personal story first before I facilitate you in the voice of the judge. When I was a professional skier, I, like I said, controlled fear. And I was really, really good at it. I was able to block it out. I was able to ignore fear. You know, that's how I was able to control it, you know, or control my reaction to it. It's like, here's fear. And I was just ignoring it. And what happened is it got pushed down into my system. It doesn't like just go out into the atmosphere like CO2, right? It actually gets stored in your system. And it ferments there. And you can get away with this controlling, kind of ignoring attitude towards fear for about 10 years. And that's what happened to me. And after 10 years, I realized that my efforts to control it were not only becoming exhausting for me, and it was kind of taking all my energy. Next thing you know, I was so burnt out because I was controlling fear, so much fear. I mean, I was dealing with a tremendous amount of fear on a daily basis. That effort led to burnout. And then because I was not dealing with my fear and blocking it out, I also developed PTSD because I wasn't dealing with my emotions in an honest way. I saw a lot of death, you know, in the mountains. I had a lot of near-death experiences myself. And so controlling fear is actually a really, really bad idea. Ignoring fear is a really bad idea. Avoiding fear. All these things just have ramifications. And like I said, you can get away with it, though. But for me, it only lasted for about 10 years. And that's what I found with my clients, is you can get away with that kind of behavior towards fear for about 10 years tops. And then that relationship, that avoidance or controlling relationship, starts to go south. And that undealt with fear in your basement kind of takes over your life. And it shows up either obviously is excessive fear, irrational fear, or chronic anxiety, or it shows up redirected in other ways that doesn't seem like fear or anxiety at all. It might show up as anger. It may show up as depression. Excessive sadness is actually because the emotions are all blurred together. You know, you can't repress one emotion without it inadvertently affecting all the others. And so I'm kind of giving away the whole story here of where we're going. You know, the pushing down of fear is actually the bigger issue. So why do we push fear down? And the key is in this next voice, actually. Vicky, allow me please to speak to the voice of the judge. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, this is the judge.
All right. And your job is to do what in this corporation? Think simple. Think kindergarten. Let me help you. My job is to judge things. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Okay.
See how easy this is?
Yeah. Mostly right. Myself. Mostly Vicky.
Okay. So you as the judge, you judge what? Tell me the things that you judge.
I judge how I my lack of ability to actually speak to you. She was very nervous when it was her turn, and I wasn't. I was in. This is just an example that just happened in the last few minutes. I didn't know how to turn on the mute or turn off the mute button, and so I found myself judging myself because I didn't. I found myself judging. Vicky was judging herself.
Hold on. Let's get this really clear because you're doing great. You're doing great. You're judging Vicky.
I'm judging Vicky.
Right. Because you're not Vicky. Vicky's not you. It's your job to judge things, not Vicky's. Vicky's not judgmental. You're the one that's judgmental. You say that's good, that's bad. Okay, she's being smart right now. She's being stupid. She can't figure out it on mute, right? Like, you're judging Vicky. You get that?
Yes.
All right. So you judge Vicky, and there's a mention of a son, a child. Like, do you judge the actions of the child? What's Vicky's son's name?
I don't understand.
My mistake. When I first asked you what you judge, you said, I judge Vicky and I judge her son. Did I hear that wrong? Does she have a son? Does Vicky?
No, Vicky doesn't have a son. I don't remember saying that.
Okay, but I must have misheard.
Okay.
So here's the thing. Your job as the judge is to judge everything and everybody, both internally and externally.
Right.
That's your job.
Yeah.
And when we hear judge, like, we immediately think, okay, negative judgments, but you also judge things as positive. And so when you look at joy and love and gratitude, do you judge those things as good or bad?
Good.
Right. And so when Vicky's feeling joy, when she has gratitude, when love is in her heart, you think, okay, she's good. She's a good person.
Right.
But when she has fear and jealousy and feelings of worthlessness, how do you judge Vicky then?
Very harshly.
Right. Exactly. And these are employees in the corporation because Vicky is just a concept. So there's 5,000 children, you know, remember my analogy, that you're going to judge as being good, you know, when she's smart and beautiful and gracious and a lovely human being, you know, you judge those voices as being good, and therefore Vicky is good. This is an internal judgment. But when Vicky is feeling these things over here and she's stupid or ugly or fearful or embarrassed, then you judge those voices as bad and you also therefore judge Vicky as bad.
Correct.
Right. And then externally, you're also very judgmental. You know, it's really funny because people say, oh, I really want to be less judgmental all the time. And I'm like, well, good luck with that, right? Because you're a very prominent voice. You're actually the second voice in this entire corporation that I'm interviewing and speaking to for a reason, because you play a huge role in making up the way that Vicky, the way that the self looks at the world, sees herself, sees other people, sees emotions. That's a good thought, that's a bad thought, sees thoughts, all of that. So tell me, as the voice of the judge, tell me some things that you judge externally out there in the world.
I judge our president quite harshly. I judge I don't feel good saying this, but I judge people that are maybe incredibly obese. People that I have another voice comes in too, but I notice that there is the judge of whoa, you know. And then I try to squash that judge and try to be empathetic.
Okay, so here's what's going on. Let me help you. Because we're now jumping around to different voices, right? Yeah. So you say, I judge overweight people, And then there was like a embarrassment, you know, like, oh, I don't want to say this. So that's another voice, you know, the voice of embarrassing or embarrassed. And then, you know, we want to move like a ham radio, one click at a time. Mm-hmm. Like right now, your job is to be judgmental, right? That's your job. And the voice of embarrassed is, that's their job to be embarrassed. And then the controller tries to control you, and that's the controller's job. It's like the controller's trying to get rid of you. Like the controller sees you, ironically, as the voice of the judge, as one of those children over here that wants nothing to do with, and it tries to push you down, lock you in the basement.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so in many ways, you even have a judgment as the voice of the judge of yourself as the judge.
Right.
You get that?
Yeah.
Now, it's your job to be judgmental, which means the other 9,999 other voices, including Vicky, don't have to be. Vicky's free from judgment. It's you who is judgmental, not her. Okay. So let's just stay in this lane, okay, like a ham radio, one click at a time. If we move too fast, it's just static. It's very confusing. So you're just, your job is to judge. So I want you to keep doing it.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
When you see fear in other people, how do you judge that? Like somebody that's pickled in fear, pickled in anxiety.
I feel sorry. I don't believe I'm judgmental with somebody who's horribly frightened or in fear of something, because I can relate to it so well. Or Vicky relates to it so well. So,
right.
Yeah.
So you as the judge, you don't see that as a sign of personal weakness or a character flaw.
No, I don't.
You judge that as something to be compassionate about.
Correct.
All right. When you see the voice of fear, you know, there's a voice called fear in this corporation. There's a voice called anxiety, you know, which is recirculating fear. So it's, they're kind of the same. When you see those voices showing up in the internal world within this corporation, do you judge them as how?
When I see them showing up in the corporation, I am not empathetic. I judge them as weakness.
There's no compassion internally.
No.
Right. And so you see them as bad. And as the voice of the judge, keep in mind, you see some things as good and some things as bad. Like apparently 47% of American population see our president as good. Like you as the judge, see, you have a judgment of the president as being good, right?
Right.
But in this corporation, you have the judgment of the president as being bad. I think I read that into it.
Yes, so, you did.
Right. So as the voice of the judge, you are not just judging things as bad. There's also a judgment of things that are good. And when it comes to fear and anxiety, they are among the 5,000 children in this corporation that you judge as bad. And in that judgment, we find the source of kind of the madness that now ensues, because that judgment leads to some sort of controlling action that pushes the fear down, tries to get rid of it, tries to ignore it, locks in the basement, throws away the key. And so it's our judgments that ultimately lead us into trying to squash fear and anxiety. And usually your judgments are learned, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
Like, more than likely, the people that are Trump supporters are teaching their children to be Trump supporters. Like, at some point in Vicky's life, she was taught that fear and anxiety is a bad thing, and thus you have a judgment against it. And usually it starts the first time a child says, I'm afraid, and a parent says, there's nothing to be afraid of, or there's no need to be afraid. Like, that sends a very clear message that fear is a bad thing, or that it's irrational, or that it's like unwelcomed or unnecessary. I call it fear shaming.
Mm-hmm.
And so at some point, as the voice of the judge, you were given a message that fear is a bad thing. Can you see that?
Yes.
All right. So this is, we're kind of decoding the mystery of why we treat fear the way that we treat it. And you as the voice of the judge has something to do with it. Is there anything else you'd like to say as the voice of the judge?
Not at this time.
Okay, excellent. I want to move on to our next, if anybody has any questions, please put it in the Q&A box. I'll check in just a minute. But Ben, it looks like you're next. And so unmute yourself, and I'm going to quickly check the Q&A box and see if there's any questions.
Hello.
All right, great. So there's no questions yet. I'll just wait for a second about the voice of the judge. So again, these are all key players that are creating the problem that we have with fear, which is that we're locking fear in the basement, which is what I used to do during my ski career. And it works for about 10 years. You don't have to deal with fear. There's definitely a payoff for locking fear in the basement, but there's a cost. And that's what we're addressing in this webinar. All right, here is a question. As someone who has grown up with racism in their family, how do you handle the judge when that pops up? Speaking of being learned. This is something that is kind of going to show up in webinar number 4. But basically, to give a little bit of session 4 away, what you do is you have to first of all see it and acknowledge it. You know, where do I feel this? It doesn't matter where you learned it from, why you learned it, anything like that. The only thing that matters is the racism that exists in your life in this moment. And if you just close your eyes, and this is asked by Teresa, so you kind of know a little bit about what I teach. You close your eyes and you feel where you feel racist in your body, and then just allow yourself to have an awareness around that, and then spend some time feeling it without trying to get rid of it. It'll just kind of resolve itself. And I don't know if that makes sense to anybody else, but that's kind of baiting you for session number 4. All right, I'm going to get out of Q&A. And Ben, we're now going to speak to another voice in this corporation that has really lent us to the problem that we have with fear and anxiety, such that it's so recirculating and problematic in our lives. And this next voice is also addressing what is taught in modern society about what to do about fear. Just going back to what emotional intelligence is considered, I mean, there's so many books written about this, it's kind of crazy to me. People say that the way to deal with fear and anxiety is to understand it and control it. So understanding it is what we're going to address next. A lot of people think that if we start to think about fear and understand it and get to know it, and we even have science on the job trying to dissect, you know, what happens when the amygdala is triggered and it turns purple and blah, 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 right? So allow me, please, Ben, to speak to the voice of the thinking mind. So shift physically, and everybody do it too. And allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the thinking mind. And who am I speaking to?
The thinking mind.
Your job in this corporation is to do what? Keep it super simple.
Is to think.
Oh, see how easy this game is. Your job is to think, right? Your job is not to feel. Your job is not to control. Your job is to think. So tell me, what is it that you think about all day long?
I think about ways to have a better life. I think about ways to stay safe. I think about ways to make Ben have a better life, ways to make Ben safe, ways to get Ben what he thinks he wants. I think about what Ben has to do for work. I think about would be a good lunch choice. I think about everything and anything that presents itself as something in Ben's life.
Right. It's like all you do all day long is think about Ben and all of these things. And, you know, it's so funny because we're all so self-absorbed. Well, no wonder why, because you're like such a big deal at everybody's corporation. And if anybody had an assistant running around like you in their background, just thinking about you and how can I make Kristen feel better? How can I make her smarter? How can I make her eat better? Like, you know, you'd start to feel like a rock star. It's like, you know, we think about these child stars. You've been around since he was like 2 years old, just thinking constantly about Ben. So, you're the best personal assistant ever.
Thank you.
And every voice has a great wisdom and a great delusion. How does he feel about you? And before you answer, here's a really lovely moment. Because the thing is, are you Ben? Is Ben you?
No.
So that is a huge question. And if you really see it that way, it's a huge realization. It's probably one of the biggest questions that Ben will ever be asked or you will ever be asked. And one of the hugest realizations. So you are not Ben and Ben is not you. And if you are not Ben, then who is Ben? And that's our riddle kind of throughout this whole practice. Anyway, back to my question. How does Ben feel about you?
Well, Ben relies on me a lot. His instincts are to listen to me. He wants me to help him. At the same time, sometimes he gets frustrated with me. Sometimes he wishes that I would go away because I cause a lot of uncertainty in his life. Sometimes Ben thinks that I prevent him from making decisions because I give him thoughts, too many thoughts about different sides of an issue and kind of paralyze him. At the same time, Ben really honors what I do for him and he knows that a lot of thoughts that he has had over his life have led to really good things in his life. And so he knows that he needs me around.
Right. So it's a love-hate relationship. Mm-hmm. You're constant, but he can get just stuck in you round and round over and over again, hashing over all the details. And, who's the guy that, never mind. I'm trying to think of the guy, Seth Godin, who talks that, okay, just, you got to stop hashing over all the details. You got to just launch the product. Like he can get really stuck in you just going round and round and round, trying to figure things out, thinking about things. And in many ways, when it comes to fear, for example, when you start to think about fear, you know, there's no end in sight of things to think about and process and trying to understand and rationalize and you know, just do your thing right now as the thinking mind around the subjects of fear and anxiety. And it's a long, tedious, arduous job that actually doesn't really result in any kind of satisfaction or relief from these feelings. So every voice has a great wisdom and a great delusion. And like we look at the controller, for example, think about this, you know, it's an insult to be called controlling, but where would we be without the controller? We'd be out of control. Like imagine a whole world of people, 7.5 billion people, and there's no voice of the controller. It would be just complete anarchy. So there's the wisdom, right? To prevent anarchy and to just have a more controlled society. But the delusion is that people can become excessively controlling and trying to control everything like I addressed. And then we look at the voice of the judge. You know, there's a great wisdom and a great delusion of the judge. Like imagine if somebody was completely free from judgments, they would be really mushy. They wouldn't have an opinion about anything. They wouldn't be able to vote in the presidential election. They wouldn't know who to hang out with, what to believe, how to align their lives. They would be completely lost. And yet if somebody's a very judgmental person, that's also considered an incredible insult. You know, and we are so judgmental. Everything is either good, bad, right, wrong, tall, short, ugly, stupid, right? And it's that judge is relentless. And so great wisdom, great delusion. So you are no different. Like imagine where the self would be without you.
the self wouldn't exist without me. Wouldn't be able to feed himself, wouldn't be able to do anything without me giving him thoughts.
Right, he'd be a tomato.
Right.
On life support. They'd still keep him alive, right? But, I mean, obviously you offer something tremendous to Ben towards all of humanity. And it's actually your ability to think that is seen as, you know, we say that opposable thumbs are what make humans kind of ruling the world. No, no, it's you. It's your ability to think and make sense of things. And look at what you've helped Ben accomplish. Look at what you've helped humanity accomplish. Bridges and outer space travel. And it's like it all starts with you. Just a thought. Yet, what's your holdback? How do you cause problems for the self? What's your delusion?
I think that I'm the only thing that can solve problems, and I try to convince the self that that I will have the solution to the problems.
People build a shrine to you and they worship you like a god. Our modern school system only seeks to develop you and help you in your department, the reasoning mind, the analytical mind, the one who's trying to understand. It's all kind of similar voices to you. Our modern school system just seeks to nurture you. And we have this belief that you're the solution to all our problems. Like if you could just really think through why you're not getting along with the wife or the kid, right? Then that will solve the problems. And if you could just really understand fear, we're back to emotional intelligence being our ability to understand fear, then you're the solution to fear too. If you could just understand it, like think through this. And that's problematic. You're not actually the right voice in this corporation for the job of dealing with emotions. So do your thing right now. Just think about fear and tell me what it's like for you.
I have an aversion toward it. I think that it is something that's problematic. I think of ways to help it go away. I think of why it is here in the first place. I think of ideas for strategizing about it. I try to approach it from all the angles that I can, thinking through, trying to understand, that's my approach.
So this is a therapy session. This is what it sounds like, okay, rationalize that you have a better chance of getting hit by a bus than the plane going down. And so fear of flying, it may be irrational. Like we're trying to rationalize fear away as the thinking mind, trying to understand it. You know, there's a lot of science around fear, like the amygdala and you know, the study of the limbic system and all that. And it's very noble efforts, but fear is a sensation of discomfort in your body. It's been around forever, since the first single cell amoeba life form. It's very complicated. It's, you know, how can we really ever understand our emotions? And so what you do is the thinking mind, because you can't ever really understand why fear acts the way it acts or why it does what it does. And it's an other employee. Now this is an interesting point. So fear is another employee in this corporation. So you trying to understand why fear acts the way it acts is kind of like you trying to understand me, Kristen, and why I am the way I am or what it's like to be me. It's not going to work. You know, you can understand a few things like, oh, I'm wearing purple today. I'm a female, right? But beyond that, you know, you're not really going to understand why fear acts the way it acts. And it's frankly going to burn a lot of energy. We're going to spend a lot of time in therapy just hashing over the details. And you're not the right tool for the job. Fear is an emotion in your body. And the right tool for the job is not to think about the fear, but find the one who is able to feel the fear. That's another kind of bait on the hook, like where we're headed. But I wanted to address you because so much emphasis is placed on you and your ability to understand fear that I wanted to get that out of the way. Is there anything else you'd like to say as the thinking mind?
Yes, as the thinking mind, I think that I'm really important. So it is a scary thought to think that maybe I'm not needed.
You are needed.
Or I'm not the solution.
Yeah.
Not the solution.
Right. And it's really important that we don't disrespect you for obvious reasons, right? I want to go back to the Einstein quote. We cannot solve a problem by using the same consciousness that created it. We must learn to see the world anew. So as the thinking mind, what has happened is, and I want you to understand this because I want to engage you in this process. So there's a couple things that you need to understand and process as the voice of the thinking mind. So right now, the way that we tend to deal with our emotions is we tend to think about them. Like, it's on you. You're the one that deals with emotions. And emotions need to be dealt with not intellectually, but actually emotions need to be dealt with emotionally. You're not going to be able to deal with them emotionally. You can only deal with them intellectually. I want you to understand that actually your thinking process has actually caused the problem for the self that caused them to sign up for this webinar series. So understand this. Those of you that have read my book maybe remember this. It's kind of a big point that I make early on in the book. But let's take animals, for example. So understand this. There's this thing called the amygdala. I call it the lizard brain. See, the brain is not an it, it's a we. There's multiple different employees that make up the entire brain. And one of these employees is the lizard brain. It's the oldest, most deeply buried part of the brain. It's two almond-sized nuggets located at the top of the spine, and it determines safe or not safe. And it's actually the manufacturing plant for fear. So what happens with animals, let's say Bambi's eating grass in a field, and all of a sudden there's some rustling in the bushes, the amygdala perceives a threat, manufactures fear, of course, sends a shot of fear to the body. It's just an emotion. Emotions are felt in the body. And then this uncomfortable feeling that is now in Bambi's body perks her up, and she's more awake and alive, and her hearing's better, her eyesight's better because of fear. And there, she sees a tiger off in the bushes. And then she fights or flees. Of course, she's Bambi. It's a tiger. She's not going to fight, right? If it was a T-Rex, maybe there would be a fight. Bambi flees. And so this process is amygdala, fear, sensation, discomfort in the body, compelling fight or flight, and then action, which is she flees. She runs faster than she ever has. So that's how nature intended fear to help people. And it's a thought-free experience. Nowhere in there are their thoughts. And it's immediate action too. Like if she thought about it first before she started running, then she'd be dead. Humans though are a lot more complicated than animals. And there's a whole extra step. And that extra step actually is you, the thinking mind. So there's a perceived threat. You know, I have to facilitate a webinar, or I have to give a speech, or I'm going to ski a 55-degree slope or whatever. You know, amygdala, perceived threat, sends a shot of discomfort called fear to the body. And then we're actually taught to start thinking about it, because that's what's touted as emotional intelligence. And then that leads to action. So we have amygdala, fear, thinking mind, you thinking mind, leading to action. And what happens is the voice of the thinking mind, because you can't understand fear, you're going to do the next best thing, which is judge it. Okay, that's good, that's bad, that's rational, that's irrational. and we have all these discrepancies, and then the controller gets involved and it decides like, oh, we just need to control this. This is a sign of personal weakness. We don't show this. Mom says there's nothing to be afraid of. Like, there's this whole process that goes on once you get involved with an emotion. And then what happens, it leads to action, but the fight or flee is not to the problem anymore, you know, not the steep slope, but you're actually fighting or fleeing the fear itself. Like, the fear has become the new tiger. An example of this is I was skiing with somebody and we were on a super steep slope and my friend froze and he couldn't move and he couldn't breathe. And so, shot of fear to the body, it's a steep slope, right? You start thinking about it. And then all of a sudden, yes, the slope is the issue, but the fear actually has become the bigger issue for him than the slope itself. And so he's freezing in the face of fear. We fight, flee, freeze, faint, you know, fidget around fear. So we have all these kind of crazy reactions because of you, the thinking mind, around the subject of fear or the feeling of fear. And that has been the problem. So, Ben, I know that you've been listening. I've kind of been on a soapbox here. But as the voice of the thinking mind, I'm not here just to disrespect you at all. But what I'm saying is, yes, you're the problem. You know, and what do you think about that?
Well, that makes me, as the thinking mind, that makes me sad a little bit because I try so hard to be a positive influence. So to hear the problem, to hear that I'm the problem is kind of crushing to me a little bit.
Right. And he's very invested in you. And I don't know what caused him to sign up for these webinars, but my guess is that he's trying to get you to help him solve that problem. How's it been going?
Well, Ben definitely tried to get me to solve all of his problems, 100% of his problems, up until a few years ago. Now it's probably about 98% of his problems.
Okay.
Ben has some other practices, some other body-based practices that I have good thoughts about them. I tell him that they're good, but Ben still definitely comes back to me for it's his instinct is to come back to me and not be in the body. His instinct is to look to me first to solve a problem, and Ben often doesn't remember that there might be another path to solving a problem. So a lot of times he'll come to me and I'll start doing my thing and start doing all the thinking. And Ben will hang out there with me for quite a long time. Kristen, your question was, how's it been going? Like, having me solve all the problems? That was your question?
Yeah, you're never going to be out of a job. That much is clear, right?
Right, definitely.
Yeah, and I really want to make sure that you feel completely honored and respected by me. You know, I'm a emotional specialist. You know, I'm trying to get people to feel their emotions. And I'm just saying that you're getting in the way. And that I'd like to maybe speak to some other voices that maybe can give Ben what he wants. You know, a solution to his problem at the root. And so that is going to require you to maybe take a break. I mean, are you interested in taking a break? Are you tired of, I mean, a lot of people are really tired of you. I've heard it before, right? Like, I mean,
yeah.
If you've been spinning your wheels, you know, on this particular problem, maybe you're up for a break.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Because if there's another voice that can help Ben solve some of his problems, then I don't have to work so hard for limited results. And then I can be freed up to have other thoughts about other things in other places where maybe I can help it.
Exactly. Perfect. I love that. So we're kind of setting you free, and we're also setting him free from you. So this is a really gorgeous moment. And again, I'm going to ask this again, because this, before we move on from you, because this is quite possibly the most important question that you or he will ever be asked. I'm going to ask it again. Are you the self? Is the self you?
No.
Okay. So you two have a relationship, and you have his best intention in mind. And I think that what you're saying is that you'd like to spend your considerable efforts and intelligence and energy focusing on things that can actually help him.
That's right.
All right. Thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
No.
Great. Let's get Alicia queued up. And I'm going to check the Q&A box, see if anybody submitted questions.
Hello.
Great. Let's give it a moment to see if there's any questions about the thinking mind. And even if you still have questions lingering from the judge or the controller, that's fine too. All right. So through this last voice, I'm going to give it about 7 minutes or so. Just if you have questions, please submit them in the next 7 minutes while I'm facilitating this last voice with Alicia. Because first question in the box gets answered for sure. Alicia, allow me please, and you ready for this? And I just outlined this process with animals, this process with humans. With animals, it's lizard brain, shot of fear to the body, action. With humans, it's lizard brain, shot of fear to the body. We start thinking about it, and then we get busy judging it and controlling it and ignoring it and all these other, you know, hubbub, which leads to action. So I want to kind of go down to the root of this whole process, and allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the amygdala.
Okay. I am the amygdala.
All right. Otherwise known as the lizard brain. Welcome. Like I said, you're the oldest part of the brain determining safe or not safe. And actually, in this moment, we're not even playing a game anymore. You're real. You exist. So you're the amygdala. You are the part of humans that sees threat in everything. Hi. I want you to tell me the role that you play in Alicia's life.
I play a not a great deal of time. I play a role. I would say I play a fairly minor role most of the time in Alicia's life. I think there are specific times when I control Alicia's life immensely, such as in public speaking. That's where I really shine. I control Alicia in other circumstances for sport, in terms of injury in particular, and fear of becoming injured, and what that would mean to her. But let's see, in the business sense, I control her in certain aspects.
Can I interrupt for 1 second?
Sure.
So we don't have a lot of time left. And my guess is who I'm speaking to may be beliefs about who the amygdala is, perceptions certainly, and what I've learned about you, and you may not really be aware of yourself, you know, this is awareness practice, consciousness practice. And, you know, while I appreciate your reality, it feels like it's Alicia speaking on your behalf a little bit. It feels almost like the voice of beliefs about the amygdala. And so that's fine. What I've learned from you is that you're more kind of raw and less rational and more kind of lizardy. Well, there's a reason why you're called lizard brain. And so from your perspective, you don't see things in terms of like, oh, that's something to be afraid of. And that's something, you know, we're, again, moving the ham radio too fast. And we have a lot of static here, like belief stories, you know, talking about, you know, speaking and talking about specific details. Like, that's not you. I want you to understand what you are then. You are the one who's in a panic all the time. You are there beneath every single moment of every single day in every interaction she has. You're the one determining safe or not safe. You're the one who is very reptilian, very raw, basic, core, primeval. And I would go so far to say, even though people have become very rational and very accomplished and very smart, that you are at the core of this corporation, the oldest, most established employee, and probably the CEO.
Okay.
Right? So I want you to find that voice now. And let me speak to the self's primary kind of animalistic, reptilian, basic, like first single cell amoeba in the history of the world, you know, moving away from danger voice. Who am I speaking to?
I'm the amygdala.
Right. Right. And, you know, humans are so rational and they start kind of speaking on your behalf, but you're the amygdala. And just notice how you feel, how you move, how you see the world. Like everything's a perceived threat. What's that? What's that? Now tell me about you.
I guess I don't know myself well.
And that's not unusual. You know, people are really trying to evolve beyond you. And this is an important tipping point with me saying that. So they're trying to ignore you. They're trying to pretend you don't exist. They're trying to control you. They're trying to rationalize you away. How does that make you feel?
Well, I want to be heard.
They've locked you in the basement and they've thrown away the key. You have duct tape over your mouth, plastic bag over your head. How does that make you feel? You want to be heard. But how do you feel?
I feel terrible. I want to run away and flee.
Right. Like what kind of an animal would do this to their primary survival mechanism? And your job is to look at the world in terms of, you know, everything's a threat. Does it feel like a significant threat to you that you've been treated this way and that you're, you know, that the humanity's in denial of you and locking you in the basement and throwing away the key?
It should, but I'm not really sure that I'm feeling that. So, yeah. If the amygdala, if people aren't hearing me, sure, that would be a terrible, awful thing.
Right. Your job is to feel afraid. Do you feel more afraid or less afraid in the basement? And keep in mind, you know, there's a payoff of putting you in the basement. The self doesn't have to feel fear. The self doesn't have to feel what you feel by putting you in the basement. There's a payoff. I want to know how you feel. I know the self doesn't feel this. I want to know how you feel.
I don't like being in the basement. I want to be out there and helping Alicia live life the best that she can.
Mm-hmm. But concentrate on your feelings. Concentrate on your body. I know you want to get out there. Do you feel desperate to get out there? Do you feel anxiety? Do you feel angry? Like, how do you feel physically and emotionally? Let me make it clear. I'm not asking Alicia how she feels. I'm asking you how you feel.
Well, I want to get out there because I'm like the most primitive person in this corporation. So I want to be out there driving everything and just feel like I'm being restrained and want to take over.
Will you be denied?
Well, I hope not.
Well, I hope not either, because if humans were to continue without you, what kind of future do they have in store? What kind of world would they live in if they got rid of their primary protective mechanism? What would happen to Alicia if she
destroyed.
Didn't?
They'd be eaten or destroyed.
Right. It's a scary world. Yeah, there's no more T-Rexes, right? But it's no less scary today. So what I'm proposing is that, you know, by trying to deny you, by trying to move beyond you, by kind of promoting the neocortex and other kind of bigger, more gorgeous parts of the brain, like, we've kind of left you behind and we're repressing you and we're locking you in the basement. We don't want to have anything to do with you. We're in complete denial of you. I just said you're the CEO of all these corporations. Oh my gosh. And from me as the lizard brain, like I look at Kristen's attempts to ignore me and deny me. First of all, I will not be denied. And in a crisis, I'm going to take over. And I see, and this is an important point, the fact that humanity is trying to get rid of me as the biggest crisis there is. And I am now in the basement screaming and yelling and doing everything I possibly can to get out. And I may be covertly the CEO of this corporation, but make no mistake, I am here as strong as ever, and I will not be denied. And in this, we find the root of people's chronic anxiety and fear. So thank you. Is there anything else that you'd like to say as the lizard brain?
No, I think that I'll just have to be more assertive and take over and get out there more.
Right. And let's do something really quick. Allow me please to speak to the voice of the self's preconceived notions about what they believe the amygdala to be. Who am I speaking to?
I am the amygdala.
No, that's different. So allow me please to speak to the voice of preconceived notions about what the amygdala is.
Notions about you.
Right. Who am I speaking to?
That would be Alicia.
Right. Okay. So one thing that's really important, and you know, the voice of the amygdala is very difficult to facilitate, especially the first session, especially if I don't kind of get on a soapbox and talk a little bit about the amygdala in advance. We all have these beliefs about how far we've kind of gone beyond that primordial, you know, lizard kind of animalistic part of our brains. And we really have a hard time grasping that this part of us still has such a huge role in our lives. You know, out here on the surface, you know, in our relative reality, we have no perception of the lizard brain. But when you start to kind of dissect all the many layers, like down deep, is this amygdala that none of us are dealing with it, or none of us are acknowledging, and we're all trying to transcend it. And the amygdala is freaking out. And so despite all these methods and modalities to kind of medicate the amygdala away, drugs, alcohol, tapping, float spas, you know, all these things that I talk about, three deep breaths, you know, spiritual practice, gratitude practice, you know, at the core of who and what we are as a human species is this amygdala, and it is running the show. And it is now, unfortunately, running the show from the basement in a covert way. And it's down there in the dark with no food, no water, no love, no sunshine, and it is scared to death. So that's why I'm going to conclude by saying, at our core, fear is with us every single moment of every single day in every single interaction that we have. And most of us are in complete denial of this. Those are the hard, cold facts of what it's like to be a human being. Nobody wants to believe that that's the case, but it is. And then here we are trying to control it. We're judging it as bad. We're trying to rationalize it away. And we're moving further and further away from our truth and the manufacturing plant for fear and how to deal with fear, you know, in an honest way, having an honest relationship with the amygdala and our fear, and it's just frankly, it's not working. You think with all these methods and modalities, we'd be having less fear and anxiety than ever before. It's quite the opposite, in fact. So I'm going to move to Q&A. We only have a few minutes left. There are no questions. That's always a good sign. It means that hopefully I've covered a lot of bases here. Now, obviously, this session isn't going to make you feel better. In many ways, it's going to make you feel worse. Like, oh my gosh, my CEO is the lizard brain, right? Running my life covertly from the basement. Hold on, we have a question. So the question is, so what are we supposed to do about the amygdala? Well, I want to give you something to focus on before we meet again. We're meeting in 1 week, and I don't want to leave anybody traumatized. So ultimately, my message is awareness is power. Just having some sort of awareness about the fact that the amygdala is down there, you know, in our basements, running our lives, and I have kind of either an ignoring relationship with it, a controlling relationship, I'm trying to understand it, I'm just trying to rationalize it away. Just getting to know that part of you, being aware of the fact that it even exists, can be very profound, first of all, and it can be a kind of an honesty practice. So if you meditate, I would like you to meditate and just be aware of the amygdala showing up in your lives and how you treat it. I want you to start to be aware and notice when the amygdala kind of shows up in your life, in your day-to-day life. And either it's really obvious or it's kind of covert. Maybe if you're having an argument with a spouse or something, is the amygdala beneath that? The amygdala says, shut up, sit down, don't quit your day job, you know, don't pick the fight, don't have the difficult conversation. Homework could be just having a consciousness practice around the lizard brain. We have gratitude practices, we have awareness practices, we have forgiveness practices, love, joy. I actually want you to have a practice where you spend the next week really, really noticing when your amygdala is having an influence on your life. And you'll start to see some things. So that's your homework. And I don't see any more questions being asked. We're at the end of our 90 minutes. We are going to speak to the voice of fear next. And we're pretty much going to spend the entire session speaking to the voice of fear and just looking at how we treat it. Now, fear is an employee in this corporation too. Fear has been listening. The amygdala is the manufacturing plant for fear. The thinking mind thinks about fear. The controller tries to control fear. The judge judges fear. There is the voice of beliefs, has beliefs about fear, just like the voice of beliefs has beliefs about the amygdala, which I think is the voice that Alicia was actually in when I was speaking to her. There's the storyteller, the stories about fear, and on, there's all these players that have all this opinion and influence over how you deal with fear. And I would bet, because you've signed up for this webinar, that most of you repress fear, lock it in the basement, throw away the key. It's actually that effort that causes problems, because that fear in the basement is now covertly kind of doing its job in any way it can. And it starts to act pretty crazy and irrational when it's down there in that dark, cold basement versus in an honored place in your life. I always end a session by putting my hands together, because this is awareness practice, and bowing, because we just engaged in awareness practice. Thank you for engaging with me. Not only does it serve you and help you in your life, but it serves me and helps me in my life. And we cannot even begin to measure the impact that the fullness of your presence and awareness has on the whole world. I'll see you in a week.